Good morning. Welcome to this edition of Radio Linguistica. Yes, you heard correctly. I did not make a mistake. In future, we will have only one radio at DGT, Radio Linguistica. Given the linguistic nature of all our activities at DGT, we chose this general title for all our broadcasts. Some will continue to deal with specifically linguistic topics, others with economic, political and so on subjects, as in the past, they will deliver the general context to the subject of the text we are translating. But now let's switch to the subject of this day, the European Recovery Fund. And I welcome here Jorge Valera. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Konrad. How are you?
Very well. So please tell us, what is this European Recovery Fund? What's behind it and what are its goals?
Yes, well, maybe just as a general general description, we have to remember that this Recovery Fund and the main pillar of it, the Recovery and Resilience Facility, was agreed last July as an unprecedented stimulus package to deal with the coronavirus crisis. It is basically based on this joint issuance of European debt of 750 billion, if we're talking about 2018 prices, so in reality it's around 800 billion, which will finance investment and reforms in the 27 member states. And part of the stimulus is grants, so non-refundable grants, and another part of the package is loans in good conditions because of the, let's say, the good rating that the EU has, the Commission has in the markets, which benefits member states as they are given, as they received back-to-back loans. So why we wanted, why I proposed this topic is because now there's been a lot of talks about whether we are being too slow with implementation of the fund, whether the fund is big enough, especially when we compare it with the US. And also now there are some difficulties and some member states are losing their patience because we are almost 1 year after. We are in the third wave. Some people even talk about a fourth wave, and we don't see the money still arriving to the member states. So it's good to see what is exactly this recovery fund, because, for example, what some experts said is that this is not an emergency response to the coronavirus crisis. For that, we have other European instruments which were approved before the recovery fund, and they were deployed before the recovery fund. And on top of that, we also have the national response, the national fiscal stimulus, fiscal response adopted by member states. And that's why the people like Eurogroup president or the Commission said that it's unfair to compare the US package with the Recovery and Resilience Facility, because in that case we will have to take into account more elements, like, for example, the strength of the European welfare state, the response given by national countries, and also, of course, I mean, on top of that, we also have all the monetary stimulus of the ECB. But in this regard, I mean, also the Federal Reserve, the US Central Bank, has been very active.
But what are the goals of this fund? Which special projects should be financed and who finances it?
Yes. So, as I said, this is not a emergency, let's say, response. This is not a stimulus as such. I mean, there is no money given to authorities, blank checks, or to citizens as the US did. But this is rather, as one one analyst described it to me, this is an investment tool. So this is basically rather a medium-term investment tool to support the transformation of national economies, especially in two fronts. One is the green agenda, and the other one is the digital transformation, because on one hand, Europe is the or wants to become the reference in terms of the green transition, and that's why we were the first to adopt this neutral the CO2 neutral emission target for mid-century, and at the same time we see all the progress and leadership made in terms of the financial regulation with the taxonomy to channel private funds to the green transition. So there we want to maintain our leadership, and that's why the recovery fund will direct at least 37% of the funds to the green agenda. And then the other big priority is the digital transition, the digital transformation, because here and here, let's say the frame it's rather different, because here we need to do a lot of catching up. We see how the US and China are taking are few steps ahead in terms of companies let's say being the reference of the sectors. We see how despite our regulation, the power and the influence is in Silicon Valley or in China because of the data gathering. Also, for example, China is doing with no, let's say, any second thoughts to feed their AI, artificial intelligence machines, so on and so forth. So here, Europe has its own rules. It's a human-centered transition, but we need to fuel this transition with additional funds and for sure regulation and more political impetus. So at least 20% of the recovery funds will go to the digital agenda. And then the third priority, which is relevant because we had the Porto Summit recently, was the social resilience, the social pillars. We don't want to make the same mistakes we did in 2008, when basically we have a recovery which was didn't pay so much attention to the quality of jobs, and in some cases the social scars were visible years after the financial crisis. So now Europe is trying to also to strengthen the social pillar, betting on quality jobs, equal opportunities, rethinking also the social protection, our welfare state, to better adapt it to this new digital economy. So I would say that these are the three big priorities. And for that, as I said, there is investment and reforms. Of course, the investment part is the most attractive one for member states, because basically money coming from Europe will create jobs, will impulse the GDP, economy will grow. So that's, of course, very much welcome for every member state. But at the same time, in order to be transformative money, you need to design these investments very well. Coupled with this, you have the reform part, which is here what we will see whether this recovery fund can make a difference. So member states have committed to several structural reforms, all of them, each of them tackling some of the longstanding, let's say, requests made by the European Commission. For example, Italy with the justice system, Spain with the labor market, France with the need to control the expenditure. France always has a deficit issue with the public finances, and more reforms. So here there's going to be a system of milestones that they will have to complete, and depending on the completion of these milestones, member states will have access to the recovery funds. But again, I mean, I think the expectations are quite high in terms of what could be achieved. with the recovery fund, not only in terms of the GDP impact, but also in terms of the transformation of the economies. And here again, when I spoke with some analysts, they told me that, first of all, there is no historical reference to see the impact of such a similar instrument. So we have to be cautious about what could be the impact in terms, the benefits in terms of the GDP. And at the same time, they said that, I mean, we shouldn't expect a radical transformation of the national economies, especially of those more major reforms, structural reforms with high political cost, pensions, labor market, things like that. Because member states right now, of course, I mean, all the reforms always have, let's say, a political impact, as we said, and governments also want to win elections. So at the end of the day, I think they most likely they will focus on, I think they will focus, of course, in some of these changes because they are part of the commitment. But we shouldn't expect overnight a transformation of the labor market, for example, in Spain. What some people said is that it will be a very good news if we see at least a substantial progress made on the digital and green priorities, combining both investment and reforms. For example, reforms in terms of public administration, in terms of new green laws to favor green technologies or to cap emissions, things like that.
Well, there's always the contrast between the rich or the northern member states and the southern ones. What would you tell to a Dutch voter or German voter or Swedish voter? Why is the recovery fund a good thing also for them? They would say perhaps this money would be spent better on national level.
Well, I mean, I would say for various reasons. The first one is that when we were affected, impacted by the COVID crisis, that was a shock that affected the EU as a whole, and it was an external sort. I mean, there is no risk of moral hazard because the economies were not unbalanced or were, let's say, were in a crisis because of the mistakes made. In fact, Spain, the country I know best, was praised in the previous years because the labor market reform they passed and things like that. So it was an external shock that everybody needed to address collectively. Also because if they didn't do that, what would be at stake would be the internal market, because some companies would be more powerful in Germany or in the Netherlands than the Spaniards and Italians ones. This could create imbalances in terms of the everything, flow of goods, market purchase power, consumers across Europe, which because at the end of the day, those who buy, for example, bulbs from the Netherlands or cars from Germany are Italians and Spaniards as well. And at the same time, because we are part of the same economic and monetary union. And what we see right now is that this monetary union is incomplete. And if you are part of an incomplete house, everybody who lives in that house is vulnerable. So either you agree or disagree with becoming member of that house. But once you are part of that house, it doesn't make any sense to be against completing that house. And that more or less, that is what is happening with the monetary union. And of course, the recovery and resilience facility is not a Eurozone instrument as such. It's an instrument for the EU 27 members as a whole. But still, this is the fiscal pillar, the central fiscal capacity that voices like European Central Bank, European Parliament, and member states like Spain, France, Italy have been called for, like a central fiscal capacity that could precisely deal with asymmetric shocks, with these sudden shocks that affect the whole monetary union. So, in fact, this would be a very interesting political debate to see whether the facility, the recovery facility, turns into a permanent instrument. course, this is not a debate for now. Right now, the priority, of course, is to overcome the pandemic. Then member states are going to be super absorbed by the discussion on the Stability and Growth Pact review and also, I mean, when to, reactivate the fiscal rules. And then we will have to see how the recovery funds are managed to see whether member states put in good use the money that they received. Because depending on that, member states will be able, I mean, those who are, for example, in favor of the central capacity will say, yes, you see, I mean, we made a good use of this money. So for the next crisis, we need to have such an instrument because it's on the benefit of everybody else. Because by having, let's say, a stronger growth in Italy and Spain, that benefit also the EU as a whole. And at the same time, we have to recall that not only Italy and Spain, the most affected countries, are going to receive money. I mean, of course, they are the two largest beneficiaries, but the Recovery and Resilience Facility, it's an instrument for all the member states.
But there are still some risks ahead. What are the main risks for the European Recovery Fund?
I would say, I mean, the main risks are those who, some of those who we were seeing so far in terms of, first of all, the ratification of the own resources decision, which is the legal text needed to authorize the Commission to borrow this 800 billion from the markets, because we saw problems in Germany with the Constitutional Court, which eventually gave its green light, even though they didn't enter into, let's say, deeply into the, let's say, the question as such, but they didn't see arguments, reasons to suspend the paralyze the ratification right now, because that actually the impact the will be more detrimental that that having actually the ratification to go forward. So we saw problems in Germany, in Poland. The fund has been also approved, even though there was some difficulties for the coalition government. They needed the support from the left party, but there are still seven member states that need to ratify the fund. And at the same time, not all the national plans that are needed in order to channel the recovery funds have been submitted to Brussels, to the European Commission. So far, if I'm not wrong, it's been 14 member states. That means that 13 haven't done that, even though the target, the date expected to do that was 13th of April, so end of April. So we see that there are a lot of, let's say, back and forth between the Commission and the capitals, because the Commission is putting a lot of emphasis on having ambitious reform, having a robust control and monitoring mechanism of the funds, and at the same time having precise milestones that they have to complete in order to disburse the funds. But also, I mean, there are some other doubts about the absorption capacity of member states of the funds, because they're going to receive a massive amount of funds, of money from the Commission, from the EU coffers, and they will need to handle that in a very short period of time. And that requires a lot of administrative capacity, that requires having good projects, and that requires also, let's say, some political leadership to steer, let's say, the plan in a successful manner.
And so what are the main challenges? You already mentioned some of them. And how will this be controlled? Which institution or which mechanisms?
Yeah, so, I mean, challenges, as I say, like the ratification of the fund, the completion of the national recovery plans, the governance of the instrument. Yeah, I would say these are the main ones, and also other, let's say, as I said, the absorption capacity of member states and the administration capacity at the national level. So here, I mean, in order to succeed, you will need, I mean, first of all, I mean, member states, national parliaments completing the ratification of the fund, and governments, national governments and the commission finalizing and approving the national plans. If that happened, the most optimistic estimate is that the recovery funds could start flowing to member states by the end of July. So that would be good, because more or less it will come at the same time that Europe achieved its vaccination target of 70% of the adult population. So it could be the summer time could be like a turning point in this crisis for the EU. And then again, I mean, countries, I mean, all the monitoring and auditing is going to take place at national level, even though the Commission will have also some overview of what's done afterwards. But the first, let's say, line of defense is auditing at national level. So there it will be in the hands of the auditors, the court of auditors of each member state. It will be in the hands of the fiscal authorities that exist in every member state, and also, of course, anti-corruption officers and the judiciary system of each member state.
Well, provisions are always dangerous, especially with those referring to the future. But nevertheless, let's have a look or try. How would Europe look like after the end of this crisis?
Yes, I mean, that's a very good question, and it's a bit difficult to respond at this stage. But because we will have to compare ourselves not only with the reforms we made ourselves, but also vis-a-vis the US and China. What we're doing, for sure, if it's done well, will put us on the track of being, let's say, the green champion, also taking into account the big legislative package that the Commission is about to adopt in June, July, for different green targets, review of the energy market, and other proposals. So there we will be a green reference. If the funds are used well, we could also, let's say, catch up a bit with this digital transition and at least reduce some of the ground lost vis-a-vis US and China. And then maybe we will be able to consider whether we complete the economic and monetary union with a fiscal capacity if the funds are used well. And if we do that, that will be one of the biggest steps made since the creation of the euro, I would even say. I mean, they say that the banking union was the biggest step since the creation of the euro, but I think that having a permanent fiscal capacity like this one for future crises and other shocks and to support member states when they are in need will be certainly the biggest step forward in years and even decades.
Well, that's a little bit another subject, but in the past always it was said you can't have a monetary union if you have different tax systems. But the national governments who have to stand national elections will not give out their hands the tax competence. So this is a problem which will remain in the monetary union.
Exactly. We will need to create own resources, which is also part of the discussion that we are having now to repay the fund itself, but also more tax harmonization, or at least a minimum rate, which is a discussion that's been taken at the OECD level, and it will have an impact at the EU level, also not only for the minimum rate, but also for the digital tax. I mean, of course, before we achieve that fiscal union, having this, let's say, common instrument, there are many other issues that you have to address in parallel. And for what we've seen over the past years is that Europe, the progress made was really, really, really slow. I mean, it was only the COVID crisis that made a huge, let's say, turns upside down the agenda and give a very big impulse to the political discussion. But the Eurozone reform over the past years was super, super slow.
But nevertheless, you are optimistic. You think the recovery fund is a good thing and we will recover. It will do its purpose, fulfill its purpose.
I'm rather optimistic because of I think by nature, and also because we have unprecedented resources there to use. But at the same time, we have to be realistic. As I said, I mean, we cannot expect a radical transformation of our economies. We cannot expect that in 3-5 years Europe is going to become a digital champion, and we cannot. And at the same time, this, even though this is an unprecedented instrument and unprecedented stimulus for the EU standards, that doesn't mean that Europe is going to become at par with the US and China. China is going to become the biggest economy this decade, and the US is injecting one stimulus after another, one financial package after another. So the Biden administration, it's at a different speed.
But at least we will then compete perhaps on the digital level with the US one day. That's the hope.
I mean, that's the hope, but in that regard, I'm more skeptic, let's say. At least it will be good if we do it in our own terms, so having a strong and robust digital framework. That doesn't mean that we have to copy what the US does in every sphere. We became a reference with the GDPR, we became a reference with the AI, even we could do that. We were the first ones to regulate cryptocurrencies. But in terms of, let's say, digital champions, we have a lot to do there.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much for this interesting presentation of the European Recovery Fund. Let's hope that they will do their work. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.